And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. You're very welcome along to Tuesday's 9 till noon show. It is 4 minutes past 9 on the 9th of July. How are you all keeping out there? Hope you're very well. If there's anything you want to talk to us about, you know the score, don't you? You get in touch with us, WhatsApps and text to 086 60 25000. 086 60 25000. You can send voice notes to that WhatsApp number as well, or give us a call on 07491 25000. And if email is your thing, it's comments@highlandradio.com, and we invite you to watch the show if that suits you. If you're at home, you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube, and just search Highland Radio on Facebook or X. But at this stage, folks, at this stage, really, you should be, if you're on social media, already following us. What's going on? Check it out. There's loads of great content there as well, and lots of behind-the-scenes stuff as to what goes on in Highland Radio. We keep you up to date with all the news and everything else. Okay, let's start with a look at the newspapers, and we'll kick off with the Irish Times. Foul play, and I thought it was important to reference this because a lot of people, as is the way now, all of a sudden were like, you know, very sadly, two men lost their lives in a canal accident in Dublin, and there's no word of it, what went on, and then people presume maybe something untoward did. It's a very sad story. It's a sad story, though, where no foul play is suspected at this time. Gardaí investigating the deaths of two men whose bodies were found in the Grand Canal near Dublin city centre on Saturday do not suspect foul play at this time. The men have been named as Donal Scallion, 49, from Ballybunion in County Kerry, and Alex Warnick, 42, who is originally from the United States. Emergency services responded to reports of a body in the canal at 8:15 a.m. on Saturday morning. Two bodies were recovered a short time later, and both men were pronounced dead at the scene. The two men were friends and had been sleeping in two tents close to where the bodies were recovered from the canal. And they're actually down on the bank of the canal, just off the road. At this time, there's nothing emerging that suggests it's anything other than a tragic accident, said a source. The main line of investigation is one of the men fell into the canal in the dark early on Saturday morning and was unable to get out. The other man may have entered the water to assist, but then got into difficulty himself. No wounds have been found on the remains to suggest foul play, that source said. On to the Irish Independent. And there's a bit of a trend going on around different parts of Europe, particularly tourism hotspots where tourists perhaps aren't welcome. Now, some of it's over-amplified by the press. I do recognise that, particularly, I think, in the likes of Lanzarote and Tenerife. But in Barcelona, there were interesting scenes yesterday. Thousands of Barcelona residents squirted diners in tourist areas with water during a protest against mass tourism at the weekend. The Spanish locals chanted, "Tourists go home," with placards that read, "Enough, let's put limits on tourism," in the demonstration against over-tourism. Video footage shows holidaymakers dining outside popular squares in the city being doused with water pistols and cordoned off using hazard tape by a crowd of almost 3,000. Alfresco diners outside Taco Bell were seen running for cover as marchers sprayed water at the tables. Were any of you out there, or anyone have relatives that are out there? Just interesting, really, to sort of find out actually what went on by someone on the ground. Maybe you or some of your family are on holiday there. What was it like? Let us know. Protesters are demanding a new economic model in the city to reduce the annual footfall of tourists and address the high cost of living. In the last 10 years, rent in the Spanish holiday destination rose 68%, and the cost of buying a house 38%. Significant increases. I presume the wages have not increased in line with that. They want maybe a more diverse economy. And we've talked about that actually here from a Donegal perspective as well over the years, in that tourism is incredibly important. But for a lot of people, it's not, you know, sustainable with the cost of living crisis if you're working within it, if you know what I mean. Any views on that, of course, let us know on the numbers. There were awful scenes in Ukraine over the last couple of days, particularly, I suppose, in Kyiv, which for the most part is seen as far away from the front line. But Russia blasted the main children's hospital in Kyiv with a missile in broad daylight yesterday and rained missiles down on other cities across Ukraine, killing at least 36 civilians in the deadliest wave of airstrikes for months. And it is an escalation in Russia's activity. Of course, there's a big UN meeting taking place and what have you, so I'm sure the timing is no coincidence. Parents holding babies walked in the street outside the hospital, dazed and sobbing after the rare daylight aerial attack. Windows had been smashed and panels ripped off, and hundreds of Kyiv residents were helping to clear debris. It was scary. I couldn't breathe. I was trying to cover my baby. I was trying to cover him with this cloth so that he could breathe, said one witness. And just the imagery is really, really tough to deal with. Obviously, very sick children, already very sick children outside. Clearly, some of them cancer patients and others very frail indeed. But they're sitting outside in their loved ones' arms outside that hospital in Kyiv. The Green Party has a new leader, and his name is Roderick O'Gorman. He stated he will talk to left-leaning parties about forming a government before speaking to Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. The integration minister was elected the new leader of the Green Party, beating super junior minister Pippa Hackett by just 72 votes. There'll be no cabinet reshuffle on the Green Party benches, meaning Eamon Ryan will remain as transport and climate minister. Minister O'Gorman will continue to serve as integration minister. He was elected leader of the Green Party in Bewlay's CAF on Grafton Street yesterday morning, earning a majority with 984. Minister Hackett received 912 votes. About only 50% of Green Party members bothered to vote, which I thought was interesting. And Mr. O'Gorman said he was deeply humbled and deeply grateful to be elected leader during the campaign. The minister said he was open to a left alliance between the Greens, Labour and the Social Democrats after the next election. He's a lot of work to do, I think it would be fair to say. And lastly, in the Irish Daily Mirror this morning, junior doctors have to work 48 odd hours. 80% of them say they have to do 48 hours per week. That's tight, isn't it? In a very difficult working environment. That's why I thought I'd reference this. 8 in 10 junior doctors say they routinely work over 48 hours a week, as the Irish Medical Organisation warns of a systemic change being needed. According to the European Working Time Directive, they should work an average of 48 hours a week with 11 hours rest a day. The INMO said the ongoing recruitment freeze means junior doctors, also known as non-consultant hospital doctors, are being forced to work even longer hours and additional shifts at very short notice. I mean, why would anyone stay working in that environment when you can go elsewhere and work in a much more favourable environment? I mean, it's a miracle sometimes you'd think that anyone works in the hospital system when you're forced to work that amount of hours in that environment. It added, the pressure is exacerbating an already dismal working environment, which routinely sees NCHDs obliged to work excess hours in contravention of the European Working Time Directive. All right, that was a quick run through the newspapers. We'll be joined by our first guest on the programme really shortly. What do you think about this? A councillor, Pádraig Rice, is a Social Democrat down in Cork. He says Ireland is a democracy and not a theocracy, with no place for prayers or religious iconography in our city and council chambers. The city's first Social Democrat councillor, Pádraig Rice, has spoken of his shock and surprise that council meetings still begin with prayer, with a crucifix hanging from the wall. Councillor Rice said he believes there is a time and a place for religious worship, and Cork City Council meetings are not that time. He's put down a motion calling for a clear separation of church and state, urging Irish people to create a modern, pluralist republic of equals. This is a democracy and not a theocracy, he told News Talk Breakfast. What do you think about that? He wants the traditional prayer at the start of meetings. In fact, he's bringing down a motion to this effect. He wants the traditional prayer, the prayer that traditionally starts meeting, to be done away with. He doesn't seem to want the crucifix hanging on the wall either. Any sympathy for his point of view, or do you disagree? 086 60 25,000. Yesterday, we spoke to Dr. Joseph. She's been appointed really to address racism in this country, this lady says, or this person says, sorry. This lady has come across as bold and entitled. Could we enter another country and start dictating in the same way? We have to work and pay for everything and watch so many handouts. There is only so much money in the pot, and it's not like the magic porridge pot. We want to help and share, but the well will run dry. Well, I think really, Dr. Joseph, what she was speaking to, really, she's been in this country for over 20 years, and worked four jobs at a time to help pay rent and to raise her children. So I don't think she's got her hand out. So are you talking about people, new arrivals? I think really the racism in her context is talking about relations between those who are already living here. Greg, why is my car insurance going up every year? No claims ever. Must have 30 plus years of driving, no claims. And yet every year it goes up and up. We are subsidising those that do have accidents and or make unnecessary claims, etc. I hope you're shopping around. I know I do sound like a scratched record in that regard, but it's important also that we do shop around and try and get the best value we possibly can. Though that's getting more difficult at times. A caller says, in the case where the driver of a car is involved in a collision is spoken to at a later time, there's no clinical evidence that he or she was under the influence of alcohol at the time of the incident. He may have consumed alcohol in the intervening period, which would not be admissible as evidence that he was under the influence at the time of collision. The Garda would be guided by the time interval between driving and apprehension. Now, if that's in relation to Paul, who was on the show yesterday, he was questioning why his son was tested for drugs. And a driver also involved in the collision was not. His son in his 20s, the other driver presumably in his 50s. That's what Paul presumed, sorry. And also neither were tested for alcohol. Now, mandatory alcohol testing is only in the event of a serious collision. So I'm curious as to what is that a hospitalisation? Hi, Greg. Would appreciate if you could announce this on your show. Due to the meeting in the Fowler Hall tonight... I want to just double check. Did that come in today? That's yesterday. All right. I had my suspicions. Okay. Hi, Greg. It would be my belief that a deposit holds the item being bought. Makes no sense to return the deposit if there is a change of mind. This is in relation to a young person who was doing a deal or was looking to do a deal with a car company. Now, they put down a deposit and... I'm not sure how long that deposit was down for, whether it was 3 or 4 days, 2 weeks, a month. I'm really not quite sure. I believe the car was prepared for sale, so that would require some work being done by the garage on the vehicle to make it available to drive off. But unfortunately, the person went to get finance and was unable to secure that finance and informed the garage of same. And then the garage said to them, well, we've spent money on this car, we've held it for a time, and unfortunately we're going to have to withhold your deposit. And obviously the young person is not too happy about that, but the garage seemingly at this point is standing their ground. What do you think? Who's right? Who's wrong? Right, so Roderick O'Gorman has been elected as the new leader of the Green Party. The Minister for Integration narrowly defeated Senator Pippa Hackett in the race to replace Eamon Ryan on a margin of just 72 votes. Though there was just a 55% turnout, so to speak, in terms of voters. Michael White is chair of the Green Party in Donegal and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Greg. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Right, okay. So are you pleased that it's Roderick O'Gorman?
They're both strong candidates, I guess. What I'm pleased about is that there wasn't a big divisive split in the leadership. And it was pretty, I think most members thought it was kind of close to a 50-50 decision. So compared to the previous leadership election back in 2020, there was less tension and divisiveness. So that's good. I think the challenge is that while most people, whether they liked him or not, were aware of Eamon Ryan because of the profile he built over the past 15 years, neither of the candidates are that high profile. So there's a job of work now for Roderick to try and create the same awareness that Eamon Ryan had.
It's a tough old position for the Greens, really, because they do seem to be the whipping boys. You know, anything that's going wrong or anything controversial introduced seems to be laid at the feet of the Green Party. Yet today we see that official figures show a 6.8% reduction in Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions last year. This happens from time to time, normally in a recession or when people are forced off the road through one thing or another. It's never happened before in a growing economy. I suppose the Greens might say, well, look, this is what we're achieving, but they probably won't get the credit for it.
No, I mean, and this has never happened, even with a downturn in an economy. This is a really significant reduction last year. It's the first time, it's the most significant reduction in decades. And it is due to the fact the Green Party were in government. You're right, we don't get credit. And we get a lot of hassle sometimes about some of the things we do, but even locally, we don't get credit. That I mentioned previously around the mica defective concrete blocks. We were going to try and put something through for the SEAI grant where all defective concrete block applicants could get onto that. That's happened, but I don't think anybody's aware that that was mainly due to Eamon Ryan and his department making sure that happened.
Yeah, but I want to mention something about that here, because I heard Aine too were crying a wee bit too that they don't get the publicity they deserve. And I actually contacted Pat O'Tobin to tell him I've received 3 press releases off Aine too over the last 4 months, right? So I'm not a mind reader. The Greens never really got this out as quick as Fianna Fáil did. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I wasn't complaining about you guys.
I'm not being defensive. It's just like sometimes you have to fight them on the communications front as well.
Exactly, and they're very fast getting press releases. It's a wider problem. We need to get better at communicating what we do, or we won't win any votes. So that's Roderick's big challenge now. I think there's also a slight question of direction. I think Roderick's more, from what he was saying, he seemed to be talking about creating some kind of alliance with other progressive parties like the Social Democrats and Labour, and Pippa was more focused on sticking to the core Green message. And that's a debate that Roderick doesn't get to decide that, and Pippa doesn't get to decide that. That's a question that's going to be discussed within the party, what the basically getting our getting ready for the next election and deciding what the momentum, what we're going to go stand on.
Well, I mean, this might be unfair, and you're here to correct me if I'm wrong. The Greens seem to, you know, they'll sit around 5 or 6 or 7% there or thereabouts from one poll to the next. It's a case of getting into government and trying to influence policy, even if it's not terribly popular.
I think so. That can change. In Germany, that's changed where the Greens become more mainstream and have picked up a higher percentage of votes. That's possible. It's encouraging to see in England that during the general election there, the Greens got more votes. So it's possible and desirable that the Greens become more mainstream in Ireland. Our goal isn't just to sit around 4 or 5% for the rest of eternity and trying to poke the bigger parties into doing the right thing.
So with that in mind, then, do you think really the Greens then should spend a period of in opposition regardless? Because, you know, at the end of the day, in this country particularly, the smallest party always seems to suffer the most in the coalition. So do you think maybe that even though it means you won't be able to directly put policies in place or influence policy, but grow the party in opposition? Because I don't really think the Greens, and again, I'm not an expert, but I don't really think the Greens in this country will ever grow to where we see them in the likes of Germany, aligned with even Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil.
Yeah, I suppose if 20 years ago, most people wouldn't have said we would have been in government at this period and achieved what we achieved. So I don't have a crystal ball, but I think I'm optimistic about what the future can hold. I don't think it would be a good idea. Like, we may not have any choice. We may end up in opposition after the next general election, but I wouldn't seek it out. We've achieved much more in government. This is an argument that party had within itself back in 2020. I think it's guff to say you can achieve stuff outside of government. You can't. If you talk to Sinn Féin, they're dying to get into government for those reasons. You're powerless. You can't affect anything outside of government. So it'd be better for the next government to have the Greens in it, I think. And that's what I'd like to see happen.
Are you surprised at the low turnout, 50-odd percent?
It's funny, the Green, because it's, unlike most of the parties, it's a direct membership vote. But that was the same the last time, when the stakes arguably were much higher. The last time, if you remember, we had agreed the programme for government, and then there was a Green Party leadership election, and Eamon Ryan only won by about 60 votes, and the turnout wasn't much higher, it was about 2,000. So I'm not surprised. It is what it is. They're a funny bunch sometimes when they decide to or not vote.
All right, listen, thanks for your time as always. We'll watch on with interest. Take care of yourself. Chair of the Green Party in Donegal, Michael White there, reacting to the news that Roderick O'Gorman is the new leader of that party. Right, okay, so as you would know, we've been covering quite extensively the issues and concerns around the Fáin Health Centre. There was a meeting last night, a public meeting held last night, to discuss the future of Fáin Health Centre. Over the past number of weeks, concerns have been repeatedly raised over the future of the health centre, with claims it's been cleared out. But the HSE seems adamant that there are no plans to close the facility. The health centre caters for patients in Fáin, Burnfoot, Inch and surrounding areas. Well, Donna Marie Doherty of our news team attended that meeting last night, and Here's what she put together for us.
The public meeting held in Fowler's Hall last night in a bid to see services restored at Fawn Health Centre has been hailed a success. Around 140 people attended, including four county councillors, one TD, carers, and those who rely on the health centre for their care needs. It's seen the formation of a committee dedicated to seeking a resolution and approximately 140 signatures on a petition to be handed over to the HSE. Organisers Carmel Lynch and Jackie Malloy gave the opening remarks. Carmel addressed the politicians present, telling them they've been voted in for a reason.
Jack Murray, Gary Plahan, Drumby Abbey, Paul Cannon and Earl Joy Beard, who's just new to the whole thing from the 100% redress. We'd like to thank you all for coming. We the people voted you in. So we the people now need you to support us to open our Fawn Health Centre. And we won't accept no for an answer.
Jackie said that even signs that were placed at the health centre have been taken away.
And even this morning they actually took away our signs and went up there. They took the signs away. Which was, you know, they have totally disregarded us. They have totally disregarded the people's community. Like Inch and Fawn are a community that would basically, you know, they've lived with the nurse. It was part of our everyday life.
The meeting heard from all the politicians present. Councillor Jack Murray told the crowd that he'd never found himself in this position before, referring to the lack of clarity from the HSE after being told multiple times since March that the service remains in place and is not in danger of being lost. He also urged the public to make their concerns known to the HSE, who said they'd not received any complaints in a statement released last week. Meanwhile, Deputy Padraig McLaughlin said that the HSE's action is not reflective of the statements that are being released.
I have to say I'm virgin and angry at this stage with the HSE, because the first response we got was that everything was fine. But as Jack says, that was back in March. And then we were continuing to get reports from the community that concerned us and information that concerned us. So we put in another question again, and they're just maintaining. They're telling us that black is white.
After hearing from all public representatives, emotions got high as the floor was opened to the public. We heard from a young mother who'd fallen ill following the birth of her third child. The woman had to remain in hospital while her baby was discharged. She said the public health nurse checked in daily with her husband, who had a newborn, as well as two other children under the age of six to care for by himself. Separately, a man who cared for his mother for a number of years said he simply doesn't know what he would have done without the nurse. Emma Gova, otherwise known as the Wee Donegal Mammy on social media, spoke. She told of how the shortfalls of the health care resources is putting pressure on her as a family carer for her two disabled children. Her parents also require her attention.
For example, I will be physio and OT for one runner in Newton Cunningham because she's an adult, technically, but my other daughter comes under Letterkenny. Right, so I have to go to Newton Cunningham and to Letterkenny, and I'm going to have to go to Moffat for the public health nurse. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. There isn't enough hours in the day.
That's right.
There just isn't enough hours in the day. So you can't get into the Bohanna is a great centre, and the doctors in there are fantastic. Credit to them. They've been very good. Just when we can get an appointment.
Yeah.
All I hear is right at 9 tomorrow morning. But this is a really progressive disease. And what we were told is, oh, yeah, absolutely, she meets the threshold, not just for one carer, but for two, she's carer two, but we don't actually have one. So just you go ahead and do what you're doing. But now I don't even have a public health nurse to rely on.
I also spoke to attendees of the meeting at how the current situation is impacting them.
It was very, very, very annoying to see it, so I was very annoyed to close. And if it was closed up like that, what are we doing? I think it'll break my heart to see it closed.
The people that I would visit, and if they need facilities such as this here, I can't transport them to Mobile or anywhere like that, because the thing is, it's sore on this patient, and it's also too far for them to travel.
Yes. You
know? And I just feel that if we don't get this up and running again, I don't know what's going to happen, but they definitely need to get it going.
I just feel that rural Donegal is forgotten. Like, you listen to the fishermen, you listen to, like, disability services, and I don't think that we should have to fight for what, for children, for special needs to get their entitlement.
Local parish priest Father Paddy Baker was then called upon to close the meeting out. He said, as a man who visits those who are poorly, he isn't sure how they'll go without.
And going around the parish in the last 2 years, there's so much sickness here in this local area. And so many people are in dire need of the nurse. And it's beyond my thinking that this could be taken away. It's just beyond my rationale to think that this would be deprived of the local people, because we're not really asking an awful lot. We're just asking for one person, one nurse to be in the area and provide the mental and physical health and well-being for the people who really deserve it.
Okay, and thanks to our journalist Donna Marie Doherty, who attended that meeting as it relates to the Foreign Health Centre. And we're no further on to some extent in that obviously the HSC says the nurse is remaining, the centre is not closed, but we've heard from people saying that the phone isn't answered, although I think that was addressed, that the place was cleared out, no files, no medical supplies and what have you. And just one thing I should say, and I don't want to complicate things, is that there's something going on in this story that doesn't add up for me, and that is that in a press release last week, the HSC said the current workload there is 20. So I was curious as to why would they say that? What's the relevance of that information? So I dug around a little bit, and apparently, and I'm open to correction on this, that the caseload should be 50. Now, I don't know if that feeds into this, that maybe the HSC believe the caseload is not big enough and something else is going on in the background, if you know what I'm saying. So, as I say, I would like to hear the HSC address that directly, because I suspect that that might be one of the root causes of what's going on here, that the workload is short of the 50 that seems to be the standard from my digging around. But as I say, if that's the case, let's have that conversation out in the open. If it's not, that's fine. Good morning, Greg. Can you ask Michael White if there's a register showing the private jet use around the world? Surely, if the farmers have to cull back their numbers of cattle, surely the millionaires and billionaires should make some of the sacrifices. That comes in from Charlie and Karen Donna. Charlie, thanks for that. I mean, in terms of air travel is a big polluter, but I think it's only about 3 or 4%. I'll dig that out for you. Now, that's including private jets, commercial jets, cargo jets, you know, passenger jets. It's around a 3 or 4% of the world's total output. Let me double check that figure. But yeah, I know what you're saying. But what the Greens will say to you is that because of the rise in prices of fertilizer, farmers were using less fertilizer. The world didn't stop turning, and that's contributed to a reduction in our green gas emissions. That's what they might say to you. So I don't know if that proves anything or counters anything. Another, it looks like in Ireland that you get celebrated for being highly incompetent. Does nobody care about the children Roderick O'Gorman handed over to an agency and the fact he shredded evidence? Well, I'm not quite sure about that. If I'd done that, I'd be in prison. Every media should be highlighting the children every single day. These children don't have anyone to stand up for them or to protect them. Just if you could be a bit more specific as it relates to the children you're talking of and their plight. I think I know what it is, but just so I know exactly what you're talking about. This listener says, well, they didn't say cough. That was me coughing before I read it out. This listener says, I met a cyclist yesterday from the mountaintop down into town and I stayed behind them. We got to the traffic lights on the Pierce Road and he cycled straight through the red light. If another car was coming, he would have been knocked off his bike with a tragic ending. Are cyclists not supposed to obey traffic lights? Well, of course they are. But you spotted someone that clearly wasn't. Greg, a friend of mine bought two cars in a big garage. The deal was done. He went to the bank to get the money and came straight back less than an hour later. The garage said they had sold them to someone else. Wow, okay. That's quite unfortunate, isn't it? Caller says he drives a 2020 diesel car that has all the same mod cons as an electric car. It even tells him to stop and have a coffee break. Indeed, I know. But that was just some person who's very proud of their electric car, and I understand that too. Right, a new law which would introduce legal restrictions on under 18-year-olds accessing adult pornography sites will be debated in the Shannon this week. The proposed law, brought by Senator Ronan Mullen, aims to criminally sanction such adult sites which don't comply with age verification regulations. Senator Mullen joins me on the programme now. Thank you for your time, Senator. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay, Greg?
Loud and clear, Senator. Your IT people have done you proud.
Good on them.
Right. Okay. Talk to me then about what you're proposing through this protection of children online age verification bill.
Well, I think there is increasing concern among people about the impact of pornography on our society generally, but nowhere is the concern greater than where it is about children. There's no dispute about the fact that pornography can have particularly negative impacts on children at the front with their personal development, their expectations of life. It's associated with addictive tendencies, with lower outcomes in terms of personal happiness and, you know, social participation and all the rest of it. So the question is, how serious do we take it as a society? I think many, many parents are concerned that some children, very young children, aren't just seeing pornography because they seek it out, but because they're coming across it.
And can I interrupt there, if you don't mind? When you say, I wonder how many of us actually are as concerned as potentially we should be, in that we put into, and I'm as guilty as this as anyone, so I can say it freely, we put into our hands a device which effectively, either by accident or with intent, allows young people to access the most the most graphic of content. Something as a grown up, I never had access to. I mean, maybe, you know, there's stories you hear of a video being circulated around, you know, that stuff. But nowadays, I don't think we're actually as worried as we should be. Let's just think about it. Let's fully reset. We allow our children these devices that has access to the as I say, the most graphic of content. I don't know if there is that public outcry that perhaps should be there, Senator.
Well, perhaps not public outcry, but I think growing concern. And of course, so far as you're talking about the access of children to devices, there is a debate starting, you know, beginning. And we have seen some initiatives around schools, you know, asking that there wouldn't be devices in schools until there are certain, or the children wouldn't have devices until a certain age. Of course, pornography is perhaps the worst aspect of what they might come across. But we're all aware as well of tragic things happening in young people's lives because they're being bullied online, or they are being presented or being invited to present images of each other. And I'm not talking about, you know, intimate images, but to dress up and look the best. And then depending on the approval or lack of it that they're getting online or through their social media, their happiness is greatly affected. So there is certainly a wider issue to be looked at about how are we coping as a society with the changes in communications technology.
I think I'm more concerned.
You could argue that process began with the advent of television.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, like what we're seeing in terms of phone ownership, you know, it kind of goes up maybe to 12 or 13 and then opinions change. I would have more concern or great concern for 14, 15, 16-year-old girls and boys who are accessing pornography. Boys believe that this is how you're supposed to behave around women or other boys, whatever that might be. But also then girls sort of believe there's an expectation on them to do what they see. You know, so how do we stop under 18s, be it, you know, your 11-year-olds, your 12-year-olds, or, you know, that formative years, particularly I think 13, 14, 15 and 16, accessing this material? What do you propose and how would it be enforced?
Well, the first thing is that we get serious about and we decide that something must be done and that something with teeth must happen. And we need to be aware that there will be pushback against any effort to deal with it because there are vested interests, there are commercial vested interests here. And I think the very fact that we haven't dealt with this issue to date reflects in part the power of vested interests, of financial and commercial vested interests. And secondly, perhaps a certain kind of libertarianism in our society that we want to kind of get away from kind of notions that might seem old-fashioned or moralistic and that this is, you know, a part of modern freedom of expression. Well, whatever about that argument, it doesn't apply when you're talking about children and how they might be affected by pornography. So there are two ways one could go about this. Commission de Meon is the commission established under law in this country, which is currently producing codes and rules for online media content providers. And it is true to say that so far as pornography is concerned, this draft code that they have issued says that, you know, the strictest measures should apply to any question of pornography being accessed by children. But what I'm asking people to do They've actually given a month for people to answer a consultation. They've put out the draft document. People have, I think, until early August to reply. And I would encourage people to go on to the website, particularly parents, but not just parents, cnam.ie, or if they look up Commissioner na Meán, and to respond to that consultation. Because what I'm seeing from their draft guidelines is that they don't go nearly far enough. They don't clearly, for example, mandate age verification when it comes to children. It mentions the possibility of it and says it should be the strict kind of it's there, but it doesn't use terms like shall. In fact, if you compare the standards that they apply to alcohol and tobacco, for example, and the promotion of that, it seems to be much less strict.
But this is where things start getting a little bit complicated, Senator, because now, up until you said that, this was about protecting children. Mm. But once you start talking about age verification, all of a sudden the adults start going, well, you know, I don't want to be given my information to the internet or social media provider. And that's where the problem really starts to begin. Because the truth is there's only one way we stop this as best as we can, and that is through age verification. But that means everybody has to provide age verification. An awful lot of people like to use social media, for example, anonymously, if you know what I'm saying. So this is where things start getting a little bit sticky, and adults who care about children start going, but what about me?
Yeah, that's true. And look, what I have said is there are two problems with the code. As I said, first of all, it doesn't clearly mandate, you know, it's not strong enough in trying to tackle this. And the second thing, by the way, is this code only applies to providers that have their EU headquarters in Ireland. So you might be talking about Twitter, you might be talking about video content providers in the media more generally. But the likes of Pornhub and organisations that have their headquarters outside of Ireland, they're the ones, you could say, are doing the real damage. I mean, Pornhub has been described as the YouTube of pornography. So what I have done is I said, look, this isn't just a matter for codes, which may be easily circumvented, particularly by these very clever commercial interests. But I am encouraging people to go online and make their views known to Commissioner na Meán, and I'd encourage them to say, you're not strong enough on this. But I think it needs primary legislation as well. And that is what I have drafted and what I present to the Seanad on Thursday. And what that would do is it would create a clear obligation on anybody purveying pornographic material to ensure age verification. And the way they can do that under my bill is they can farm it out to third parties, which could be approved by the minister as parties that could kind of receive information for the purpose of age verification. And my bill says there'd be clear rules then about how long that information can be kept for, and that it could only ever be released as part of legal proceedings being taken. So there is, if you like, a nod in the direction of people's right to privacy, which is important, but children's right to safety is even more important. And that's why I don't think there will be movement on this until we put the pressure on government to say, no, not only do we need codes which media can judge themselves by and that they can be judged by, and of course there are fines possible under those codes, but we need something stronger. You need clear criminal liability if children under 18 access pornography online because there isn't proper
like
age.
It is really quite a bizarre world we live in, isn't it, in that we have this massive industry, and there's further ironies within it, but this is massive industry that is digital based. So actually, really, if there was any will at all, we could, there's always possibilities to circumvent and what have you, right? Yes. But you make it as complicated as possible. Like, we have an industry that you don't have to build any walls. You know, you don't have to dig any lakes. You don't. It literally is there if there is a will to protect children. Now, this is where I always think, to reiterate why I think we'll always struggle here. I think one of the most conservative right-leaning spaces at the moment in this world is Twitter. I think it's very conservative. It's very free speech orientated. There's a big pushback against a lot of stuff like LGBTQ, transgenderism, that type of thing. Massive pushback. Yet, it is one of the biggest platforms for hosting all manner of pornography and violent videos. Mm. So even in that space, the people who would probably see themselves as quite conservative, and it's getting all the more so, would be the most likely to resist anything that encroaches on the freedom to share whatever information you might wish to, or to put into place any barriers to free speech or anonymity for that matter. That's the irony of the whole situation that we find ourselves in this world right now.
Yeah, but I'm not sure it's conservatism, but you're right. There is a kind of a...
Whatever
a
the phraseology is, my apologies, that's my ignorance.
There's a kind of an alliance between kind of right-wing libertarianism and left-wing libertarianism in
like
this
the whole issue.
Yeah, but I think what we can say is this, that in the end, if we want this, we can have it, you know? And what I'm asking your listeners to do, and as I said, not just parents, but in addition to all the bread and butter issues that you need to be talking to your politicians about in the run-up to a general election that could take place this year, you need to talk to the likes of your TDs, Thomas Pringle, Charlie McConnellogue, all the rest of them, and say, listen, if you're going to do your job right, you will be pushing for strict age verification so that we do our level best as a society to make it hard for porn providers. Of course, there's going to be people who circumvent. There's VPNs, for example, that people can use to hide where they're coming from. But to be honest with you, it would be such a revolution to start with, to start saying, actually, we're going to start tackling this and we are going to evolve our systems over time so that we do make it hot for them. And just to give you an example of what has happened in the United States, in some states where they have introduced these age verification measures, and the likes of Pornhub have had to actually close down their services in those states altogether. Now, that's actually not my goal. As I said, I think the question of adults accessing adult material, obviously not involving any kind of exploitation of children, needs a separate response. Mm. It is a problem, but it needs a separate response.
I think we also, everybody listening has to say, I think if you were an adult and you don't have an issue with under 18s accessing this pornography, you'd have to start questioning your own attitudes and self, I think.
Absolutely.
I think we all, every adult, the default position should be no. I'll go onto the Commissioner Man website. And I know I'm taking one side in this, right, but I don't really mind on this, because why would anyone want anyone under 18 being influenced by this type of material?
Yeah, particularly when you look at what it does to people. And as I said, the addictive, you know, I mean, the number of people in our society who are addicted to pornography. And in the end, the way these companies think is get them young, you know, get them, you know, addicted and needing this industry. So we've got to get serious about it. I'm asking people both to respond to Commissioner Mian's consultation, but to respond in terms of say, look, it's not good enough that you don't cover international porn providers which are easily accessible online in Ireland. And it's not good enough that you're not making it mandatory that there would be the strictest age verification. This needs a criminal law response as well. And I'm asking people, therefore, secondly, to lobby their local TDs in the Highland Radio catchment area, which is very large, and you have a very big listenership. And please act on this, because this is how we make a better and a healthier society with less violence against women, etc., etc. You know, we can't, on the one hand, be wringing our hands every time there's a crime, for example, against a woman in our society. And we know about the problem of violence against women and our gender-based violence generally. And not ask the question about how and to what extent is pornography a factor in causing the kind of attitudes that lead to this? Because it certainly is. And I think it was that terrible murder of Anna Kriegel some years ago, if I recall correctly, where it came out in the court case that there was an influence of, you know, the access of the murders in
and
that case.
Of course, and that goes to the extreme, of course. But, like, you know... Yes. I think really what's most relevant in here is consent and what have you. I think that's where in an everyday scenario, I think that's where, especially when you see what some of the top searches are in this country, I can't read them out, but step this and mother that and babysitter the other. And, what, and the company themselves are releasing, that's what's being searched for, probably by adults. But I think that in itself says quite a bit.
It's evil stuff. And I say the best thing we can do for the younger people of our society is to make it hard for these pornographers to get their services out there. It shouldn't be that young children have this stuff pushed at them from an early age. It shouldn't be that it's somehow normal for young people to access this stuff. So we need a whole change of mindset. But I'm afraid it is time for our government to get serious about this stuff and not to be making excuses for vested interests in the pornography industry. So I'm asking people again, please lobby your politicians on this and lobby them hard and keep at them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. You know, I really do appreciate your time. That's Senator Ronan Mullen there. And as I say, you know, you would have someone like, say, for instance, Elon Musk, who singularly owns Twitter, X, as it's called now. And a lot of his posts about threats to children, danger to children, but he's running a platform whereby children can freely access it and are exposed to some of the worst stuff that you could be exposed to in terms of, you know, graphic violence and graphic sexual content. So when I hear people lauding people like Elon Musk, I go, right, you know, you claim to be a free thinker, really? Why aren't you calling him out on some of this stuff? A caller says, why not get the device manufacturers to soft lock the access to these sites once it's once it is told the user is a minor? We have had parental controls on other things for years. That is possible. You can do that. But that requires the parent or the guardian actually setting those filters up. You can do that. The devices allow you to. Also, you can get apps that would help with that as well. But the caller goes on to say, when the user's age is put in by a parent, then there is a device-wide lock on certain sites like Pornhub or LiveLeak, which I'm not familiar with. Simple solution, no one's GDPR is broken. But as I say, the problem is maybe us as parents and guardians aren't doing that enough. Thank God for the likes of Ronan for his interest in protecting our children. We need more politicians like him who speak up with honest and genuine concerns. Keep up the good work. That comes in from Kathleen in Letterkenny. Right, okay, thanks for that, Kathleen. It is time for us to take a break for the news and obituary notices, but it is Tuesday, which means that coming up in the next hour, we've got Community Garda Information.